You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Jennifer Coates. Jennifer, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Jennifer, we're going to talk about your work today, but since it is an unusual year, and now it's the anniversary of this unusual year, how has it been? You've been, and where have you been? How has the last year impacted your work, if you can summarize that?
Yeah, sure. It's so crazy to think that it's been a year. But I was at my husband and I have a place in rural Pennsylvania where we were for the first 7 months of the quarantine last year. And I actually had COVID for the entire month of April, really. I just started getting sick at the end of last March, and I spent pretty much an entire month in bed, unable to really function. And I did manage to bring paper and colored pencils into my bed. So I was able to sort of have like a little makeshift studio, and I made drawings just to sort of keep myself from getting too depressed and crazy, I guess, feeling, you know, very, very weak physically, but I was able to draw, and that was amazing. And so in terms of how the year has affected my art practice, I have to say, and I've heard artist friends say the same thing, you know, while it's been a sort of global shit show and a tragedy in so many ways, it's really been good for the hermit in me who loves to be in the studio. And I feel like I've just been able to be much more thorough and focused and concentrated and have unbroken periods of work, and it's actually been an incredibly productive time for me. So
Well, it's good to hear. That's good to hear. And so your month with COVID, that was right at the beginning. You didn't go to a hospital or anything, it sounds like, right? You stayed home and just took care of yourself?
I stayed home, and I was on the lookout for signs. If my breathing was labored just sitting up in bed. I had, you know, people in my life who are nurses and doctors who were advising me, but it was not the time to get tested or go to the doctor, as, you know, everybody was like, trying to stay home as the hospitals were getting inundated. So, it was terrible. And I mean, really, and I had symptoms for about 3.5 months after that. It wasn't until mid-August that I started feeling, you know, normal when I would take walks and do anything remotely physical. But I'm fine now, and I feel very grateful for that.
Wow. And so did you take a test for antibodies kind of things? Because I also experienced what seemed like COVID about a year ago. My whole family did. It was pretty brutal.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't have like proof that I had it. I just know that when I spoke with my doctor and everybody else was like, okay, that's what it sounds like, right? You know, I was labored, breathing,
right.
You know, couldn't catch my breath walking up the stairs and stuff like that. So, I feel pretty 99% sure that that's what it was. And I don't really have much confidence in, you know, the antibody test or like whether, you know, of course people can get it again with the different strains, and the tests aren't always reliable. So, you know, I think it's like this freaky shapeshifter, this COVID, right? You don't know what system it's going to affect, or, you know, how it's going to, who it's going to infect or when. It's very strange.
That's right. That's right. So let's talk about your work. As you got better, what work have you been doing? Let's talk about your work. It sounded like you've been drawing initially when you were sick, and then what happened?
Well, I had been doing these Photoshop collages, which I do every now and then, where I take artworks from different time periods and overlay them. And erase away from layer to layer. So there's different bits of each image exposed, and I sort of change the, you know, the color, brightness, and saturation, and they become these kind of like history, you know, kind of a flickering of different periods in art history. And then I'll take those Photoshop collages, and I'll make colored pencil drawings from them, and then from those drawings I'll make, you know, like gouache works on paper, and then I'll make little paintings from those things, and then the little paintings into bigger paintings. So it's really, I try to cycle through imagery in different formats and different scales, so I feel by the time I'm working on an 8-foot painting, I feel really comfortable with the imagery and how I'm handling it. But one of the themes that I came that I found exciting at the beginning of the pandemic was, and it ended up being like kind of hilarious. There are these drawings by Poussin, the Triumph of Pan. And so there's the Triumph of Pan, the god Pan, Pan.
Right.
So there are these bacchanals, like these kind of drunken, disorderly orgies before these statues of Pan, and they're immersed in the landscape. And I was sort of toying around with them, looking at them, copying from them. Also, Picasso had made this gorgeous Triumph of Pan painting on paper after World War II, based on the Poussin series. Leon Kossoff also did a series of prints based on Triumph of Pan. So I was kind of looking through how that imagery was treated by different artists and engaging myself in the history. And the more I thought about it, I was like, oh, okay, so, you know, big drunken orgy dance parties are not something we can do right now. So I found myself very attracted to painting these crowds, you know, crowds, scenes tumbling all over each other during a quarantine. And then when I thought about, like, Pan, the god Pan, this god of, like, chaotic behavior outside of, you know, normal societal rules in the woods, that Pan is the root of pandemic and panic and pandemonium. And so that gave it a whole other level of interest for me. So I ended up making lots of drawings and small paintings and then larger big paintings of these tumbling kind of figures around the statue of Pan.
So that's so interesting. It does sound, you know, like such kind of pandemic work, right? I mean, I love that idea of Pan, of course, and that makes sense that would be where the word, part of the word pandemic comes from, pandemonium, panic, and these paintings, these drawings, you know, we'll see images of them perhaps in this interview so other people can look at them, but they seem to evoke a kind of wish fulfillment, right? It's a little bit about what we wish for happening. It's kind of like a super social situation, right?
Yes, it's very social, very very much, you know, people would be breathing on each other and exchanging, you know, their germs and sharing, you know, like drinking from the same cups and all these things. But now we're feeling, you know, even as the vaccines are getting introduced, I feel like it's going to take a while, I think, before we feel comfortable, you know, at least before I can imagine feeling comfortable, you know, breathing on each other in a small space. I mean, I think about actually my last show opened, you know, last January, and the scene in that opening, in the small gallery, crowded, sweaty, hot, you know, yelling to be heard. It's kind of hard to imagine something like that happening, because we've all trained ourselves to be a little bit afraid.
Yeah, even shaking hands, kissing friends, hello, you know.
Yeah.
It's painful to think that all of that is going to take a while to come back, but I guess it will at some point. So
I know.
So let's talk about the colors that you're using and the forms. How do they reflect some of this kind of narrative of Pan and these, for lack of a better word, super social situations or orgies
Well, in terms of my colors, my palette, I really feel I'm interested in like a sort of over the top, like acidic, very like optical kind of buzz between the colors, very saturated, quote unquote unnatural kind of palette. I think a lot about I use acrylic paint, and now I'm using spray paint somewhat. So I was just talking recently about someone asked me why don't you paint in oil paint? And it's a really interesting thing to think about the history of oil paint and what that means versus the history of acrylic paint and what acrylic paint signifies. Like oil paint is sort of traditionally about flesh and it's from the earth and it's wet. You know, you can work into it. And acrylic has more to do with 19th century synthetic chemical, history, the way synthetic chemistry evolved around the Industrial Revolution, with these chemicals being derived from the sludgy runoff of coal-powered factories. So coal tar became this very kind of promising, malleable, like unpromising sludge, but it rendered like tens of thousands of different synthetic chemicals. And weirdly, in the 19th century, a lot of the synthetic chemistry was driven by the dye industry, by the need to kind of have like new, you know, like a color fast purple, for example. There's a whole story behind the color purple. And a lot of these pigments were then used in, you know, like the first synthetic pigments used in the painter's palette. But for me, acrylic paint it's pollution is written into its history, right? So I think of my colors as being very toxic, and you know, the more sort of synthetic they look, the more it kind of points back to the evolution of those colors, like a rainbow, kind of a fake rainbow emerging from this toxic sludge. So that's exciting to me.
I like that because you're making, I mean, when you describe that, and even though we're not looking at colors, it sounds like it could be awful, you know, kind of toxic color, but you're making this your aesthetic, so they become beautiful, right? They are beautiful. It's turning something that, it's such an interesting history in what you just spoke about, because it's turning, reflecting on that history, but making something that is, as you say, toxic into something beautiful, really, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fascinating about that history is like, you know, and just that, you know, we, in terms of synthetic chemistry, like there's not a place on this planet that hasn't been touched by the chemicals. Even the most remote island in the middle of the Pacific has been found to, you know, have certain chemicals. There's no human on this planet, no entity on this planet that is free of, you know, that kind of chemistry. And so to kind of think about painting the landscape or painting, you know, this human desire, like pagan experience in the landscape, this desire to merge with the trees and the animals, but inflecting it all with this kind of toxic kind of poison, pollution. I don't know. To me, that just makes it, I guess it makes it true to me, because there is no kind of untouched nature anymore. It's all been sullied.
Yeah. It has. So when we talk about like the whole message or narrative of your paintings, you know, you're talking about Pan and gatherings and also toxicity. What do you feel is the message of these? Because, you know, it sounds so mixed in a way, all of these things, a kind of both, you know, attraction and repulsion to things that are both social and environmental.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, as far as what I think about when I make them, I mean, I hope that there's a sort of revelry that comes across, a like celebration, a kind of seduction into like a world of color and, you know, art history, and immersion of the, you know, human psyche into like a matrix of the forest. But also a kind of, you know, maybe there's loss associated with it. Like there's something utopian about it, you know, an idol from another time period, but this darkness, this sort of knowledge that it's like under threat and it's ghostly and it's maybe haunted and, you know, kind of problematic.
Yeah, I like that. And Have you been also writing? Is there other things that you've been working on in the past years, as well as paintings and drawings?
You know, I haven't been doing a ton of writing this past year. I found that I've just really, really thrown myself full on into thinking visually, drawing and painting, and doing a lot of image research. That has been a huge, huge thing for me. I have been doing more reading than writing. I have written, you know, in the past, and I do enjoy writing about art, but I've been so delighted to allow myself to really be like a super, super studio rat and just paint, you know, as much as I can. So
I like that. So let's talk about the reading. It's one of the last questions here, but it sounds like you've been doing a lot, so maybe we could go over different things. What are you reading now, or you know, let's talk about some of the things you have read, but what are you currently reading, and also maybe let's talk about a book that really impressed you over the last year or so.
Well, I have my, you know, books that I read that relate to research that I'm doing related to my work, and then I have the books that I read that, I mean, they still relate to my work, but are more kind of, you know, for pleasure. But a book that I've been revisiting lately, because I'm actually, I'm teaching it, I've assigned it to some students this semester, is What Color is the Sacred by Michael Kaufig. I just love that book. I'm totally fascinated, as I spoke about, the history of color and its relationship to synthetic chemistry, but also the history of color as it relates to colonialism, cultural kind of meanings of color, how our perceptions and meanings that we attach to color changes based on the time period and based on the culture you're in. So that book is just an amazing resource. And I love reading books on color generally. There's a book by Esther Leslie called Synthetic Worlds that talks a lot about the Industrial Revolution and its relation to color. And then in the studio, when I'm working, I love to listen to cli-fi, climate fiction, and I'm in the middle of Kim Stanley Robinson's Ministry for the Future, but I also loved Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sowers. I read a book recently, I think it's called Children's Bible, I think that's what it was called. Anyway, and I love books that take place in the near future and are trying to, where the authors try to reconcile, like, what does human society do with climate disaster? That is, like, a big, I listen a lot to also climate podcasts. There's one called Radio Eco Shock that's really good. But, yeah, that's sort of where my attention has been going lately.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because those books, of course, are also informing your practice, right? Things about
yeah.
the ecology and everything you said, in a way, because you
yeah.
said at the beginning of your reading list, these are things that inform or have something to do with your practice, or that there are books you read, you know, about that, and then there are other things. But it sounds like everything you've said, in a way, ties into your practice, the history of mm-hmm. color as up to what you're reading now.
Yep, definitely. You know, I think that's what's so cool about being an artist, is that you can, it's a big umbrella, right, that you can kind of, whatever you're interested in can kind of get rolled into your studio practice and incorporated
yeah.
into your work. Yeah.
Absolutely. Jennifer, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today and for sharing your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.